We'll learn about a ham radio education videographer in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the 8x10 studio of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with the October 7th Rain Report podcast. The name Dave Kassler, KE0OG, won't ring a bell with many of you unless you have watched his ham radio videos on YouTube. So just who is he? Recently, Eric Guth, 4Z1UG, spoke with Dave on Eric's weekly podcast, QSO Today. This is the first of two excerpts from that conversation, which began with Dave talking about his radio roots.
I had a doting aunt who gave me a Hallicrafters S20R, shortwave receiver, all band shortwave receiver, and I was fascinated by it, and I came across some people who appeared to be talking to each other, and I asked my father about it. He says, oh, those are hams. I says, how do I learn more? And he said, I don't know. And so I pestered him for a long time, never did get me hooked up with another ham. This was in Southern California, so there should have been plenty. So it kind of sat on the shelf for quite a while till I was a junior and transferred from UCLA to Brigham Young University. And BYU had, I think they still have, a very nice club station there. And I hung around the club station enough until I finally met somebody who had a key and could let me in and got involved in the ham radio club there. And the president of the club, a guy by the name of Tom, was very helpful, and I got my novice license in early 1975. I was WN7AIU. It's kind of interesting how I learned the code. I had a roommate that I browbeated into learning to send the code, figuring that as he learned to send it, my speed would come up in receiving it. It got me up to 5 words a minute. I upgraded to general. There was a guy my age across town, and the way my Heathkit HW16 worked, whenever he was on the air, I couldn't be because he completely captured my front end. So I got to know him, and we ended up staying up late at night, sending pages of QST to each other to get our code speed up. And then we went down to the FCC office in Los Angeles and took our tests together, and I became WB6GBT. And I remember saying to myself, well, I can never give up code. It's just so much fun. But, of course, as soon as I got a Yaesu FT201, there went the code.
And what was the Yaesu FT201?
Well, it was very much like the FT101, except it didn't have 160 meters. It was sold in the U.S., I think, only for about 3 months. And my friend Randy, WB6MMJ, who's still a ham today, he got a TS520. I believe you have one. That's the radio I should have gotten. But for some reason, I fell in love with this particular Yaesu, which was the same price, and should have gotten the Kenwood. The FT101 was a little bit out of my financial reach at the time.
I think the idea of using the HW16 as the first rig is terrific. That was my first rig. I love that radio. Maybe because it was the first rig. Did you have any other mentors or Elmers that were helping you after that point?
You know, here's the thing. I think one of the motivators for the videos that I do is that I did not have Elmers. There was this guy, again, who's my age. We were progressing together. We found another guy our age, mid-20s, who was a general. And we just palled around together. We'd go camping and take the radio. We'd just hang out. And that was it. It was the three of us. There was a radio club there in town. But frankly, nobody seemed real interested in these young guys. So I had to mentor myself, and I made a lot of mistakes. I learned to solder about halfway through building the HW16. And I think what happened is I finally successfully tinned the soldering iron without knowing it. And suddenly the soldering joints worked a lot better.
So, can I ask you where this was in Southern California?
In a town called La Crescenta, due north of downtown L.A., up against the mountains. And not the world's best spot for ham radio because the mountains blocked my signal to the north and east. To me, DX was Northern California. I did work an occasional Mexican station. My favorite contact, while I was still at home with my parents before I went into the Air Force, I came out of the shower and was buck naked. And I flipped on the rig while I started to get dressed and heard a guy calling CQ with a kind of a funny call sign. It was a key prefix. I picked up on it. The guy was my age. He was in the Air Force. We talked for about 10 minutes. And he finally told me where he was. He was on Johnston Island conducting a rag chew with the DX station, which I don't think the people on who were listening appreciated that, because as soon as I let go of the QSO, there was this incredible din of a pileup of people trying to get in there. But it was fun talking to him for 10 minutes.
Did ham radio play a part in the choices that you made for your education and career?
Oh, absolutely. It was fundamental to it. I got my degree in mathematics at BYU, but then as I went on, I went into the Air Force, and then somewhere around 1978 decided that I probably wasn't going to stay in the Air Force, so I needed to get some more education. So I started work toward a master's in electrical engineering with emphasis on communication. It ended up being emphasis mostly on communications with satellites, but...
You're listening to a conversation between videographer Dave Kessler, KE0OG, and QSO Today's Eric Guth, 4Z1UG. We'll learn more about Dave and his ham radio educational videos in a moment. This is the RAIN Report, the weekly podcast of the Radio Amateur Information Network. www.therainreport.com online and on WTWW shortwave on 5.085 megahertz. You're listening to a conversation between videographer Dave Kessler, KE0OG, and QSO Today's Eric Guth, 4Z1UG. We'll learn more about Dave and his ham radio educational videos in a moment. This is the RAIN Report, the weekly podcast of the Radio Amateur Information Network. www.therainreport.com online and on WTWW shortwave on 5.085 megahertz. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The RAIN Report from www.therainreport.com.
My master's thesis was written about machine decoding of Morse code.
Did you make a career in satellite communications then?
No, I went into the Air Force and worked at a radar squadron. After I got out of the service, I went to work for Northrop and became what they called a systems engineer. That's the guy who knows how all the parts and pieces fit together. I made my career out of doing systems engineering pretty much the rest of my life. And I will say that I learned more engineering truths in ham radio than I ever learned in the classroom, because I could put a practical application to it. Although it wasn't directly radio related per se, although there were some satellite questions. I once took a guy to task saying, you know, this link will never close. Oh, it's fine. It's fine. No, take a look at this. Even when I went to IBM, there's this mindset of being an engineer, looking at a problem, seeing how the parts and pieces fit together, that I really picked up that ability doing ham radio.
What's your current rig?
The current radio I've got right now that I absolutely love is Yaesu Fox Tango DX 3000. It's not the top of the line radio. It's not their 5000 or 9000. But I'll tell you what, this radio has the best receiver of any rig I've ever had. It's truly amazing. And I live off the little waterfall diagram. I use that more than I use the dial indicator. If I'm on 40 or 20, that those bands still aren't filled out anymore. I remember when I first got into radio, good luck finding a spot to put a CQ, but that's not true anymore. With that waterfall, I can find signals and jump on them. It's great. And I've got a little amplifier here, Maritron ALS-500M, which dropped into my lap. It was an offer I couldn't refuse. So here I am running an amplifier to a vertical. I've got to get myself a beam, I guess.
And what kind of vertical do you have?
It's a Butternut HF9V. I put the thing together many years ago, and when we moved down here to southwestern Colorado, it kind of languished. And then about 2 years ago, I did a complete rehab job. Took it apart to the last nut bolt, rehabbed everything, cleaned it up, replaced one of the bad capacitors, put it back up, and put gobs and gobs of radials down on the thing. And that seems to be the thing that makes the difference with that antenna, is gazillion radials. There might be more money in those radials than I put into the antenna in the first place.
Are you on a pretty large lot? Do you have room for antennas and towers and all that kind of stuff?
Well, we have an acre here. There's a little tract, about 12 homes here, otherwise surrounded by state wildlife and U.S. Forest Service land. Where we pick to live has no mountains so close that they're going to block my signal. The highest mountain peak around here is less than 3 degrees above the horizon. So they do pretty good here.
And what's your favorite operating mode?
Rag chewing on sideband. I mean, I used to do a lot of PSK-31, but that has waned a little bit. I've done JT-65 and JT-9, but that is very highly formatted. That's not rag chewing at all. I've heard about the new mode FT-8 or something like that. I plan to try that. But frankly, my best QSOs are the ones where we get beyond the usual, okay, I got this rig, you got this rig, you know, and so on, and just start talking. And those are great. Those can go on for an hour. And at the end of it, I feel like I know somebody new, got a new friend. And even though we may never meet again, it's just a very rewarding thing to make contact with another human being who shares the same interests wherever they may be, usually in the U.S. or Canada, sometimes a little longer than that. Occasionally, there's a guy down in South Africa who has a very powerful signal, and I've spoken with him a few times too. But,
okay.
Yeah, rag chewing.
Dave, you came to my attention because you have an amazing YouTube channel where you teach just about everything in ham radio. How did it start for you?
I was asked by our church, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Church, to help put together an emergency communications network for the Mormons who are out here in the Western Slope for, you know, we're in a snowstorm. Do we have members who need food? This kind of thing like that. I'd done this before in other places. It worked really well. But out here where we live is so sparsely populated and so spread out. I tried doing an in-person class, got very little response. I think 4 new hams out of it. And they were all very local to where Montrose here and none from the outlying areas. And so, you know, I said, well, people can self-study, which is hard because that takes a lot of personal stick-to-itiveness. Or I could put maybe some videos together, a video to introduce each chapter. What I tried to do was read through the chapter and think to myself, okay, if I'm new, what would I have trouble with here? And I'd explain that. And then people could read the chapter, read the questions, and then go on to the next one. I had almost no uptake locally. Nobody seemed to want to do that, one or two. But then I started getting comments, emails, messages, and things from people all over the country who were asking questions by leaving comments on the videos or saying, keep this up. Oh, had some wonderful comments that you know, Dave, the way you present the materials the same way I think, you know, this kind of thing.
And that's a wrap on the first of two excerpts from an interview with YouTube videographer David Kassler, KE0OG, by Eric Guth, 4Z1UG, for his QSO Today podcast. We'll conclude our excerpts from Eric's discussion with Dave next time. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2017 Rain. All rights are reserved. Now for you QSO Today listeners, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from all of us connected with RAIN, the Radio Amateur Information Network, www.therainreport.com. Keep on hamming.